Well, hello and welcome to Best Practices in the Financial Services Industry. This is your host, Marie Swift, and I'm joined today by Mark Klein, who describes himself as a recovering ERISA attorney. Mark is the founder and CEO of PCS, a fiduciary record keeper for retirement plan advisors and sponsors. Mark is also the co-founder of the Advisor Lab, a comprehensive compliant technology platform for plan advisors, and he serves on the board of managers for Advisor Trust, a conflict-free trust company. So, Mark, I'm excited to have you here today to talk about some of the big challenges that you see advisors and financial services firms facing in the next 1 to 3 years. So how does the world look from where you sit at your firm?
Yeah, well, from our perspective, there's never been a greater challenge, really, than this elephant in the room, the DOL's expanded fiduciary regulation. According to really everyone who's weighed in on it, the regulation's the most significant change in the last 40 years. It affects how investment advice is provided, really, to every 401k plan, clearly every IRA now, and every rollover distribution to or from a plan or an IRA. So it's hugely impacting us and our business and advisors who are working with us. Under the new rule, providing advice just one time only, really just saying the word recommend will make you a fiduciary. There's no need anymore for any mutual understanding. The advice doesn't even have to be the primary basis for an investment decision. The client just merely needs to receive the advice, not act on it. So recommending a rollover will be considered fiduciary advice even if you're not recommending specific investments. The new rule infamously or famously provides exemptive relief, of course, under the BIC or BICE exemption, the best interest contract exemption. But that's only where the client approves the product purchase for their account. There's no exemptive relief from the fiduciary rule if the advisor has discretion so that you can select an investment that pays you greater compensation. That clearly was and is a prohibited transaction and violates the prohibited transaction rules contained both in ERISA and the Internal Revenue Code. Using BIC requires the financial institution to indicate that the advice is in the best interest of the client, that you're charging no more than reasonable comp, you're not making any misleading statements about transactions, compensation, or other conflicts of interest. So the question becomes, what's reasonable compensation? And the real protection against unreasonable is if you document the process that's used to determine what's reasonable, including benchmarking, the frequency of meetings, what tasks are you performing for your client, and how are you fulfilling those responsibilities, and how are your fees fair relative to others that you're providing services for and relative to others out there in the industry. What the new rule, I think, I'll point toward is really fee levelization. When you think about it, if you're receiving a level fee, there's really no potential for a conflict, right? Regardless of what you're recommending, it's not impacting your pocketbook or your wallet. So, in fact, you can't run astray of the prohibited transaction rules. So I think a lot of folks will contemplate or move away from different fee structures, different 12B1s or finder's fees on mutual funds to real level fee platform. And most firms will see that. I think a lot of folks will see that as an entree into this marketplace. When these rules are detailed, there's quite a bit to go through, but it also presents a great opportunity for those folks who've been fee-only advisors or haven't considered this marketplace where there's going to be a lot of opportunity to step in and assist clients and serving and sitting on the same side of the table.
You know, Mark, some of what you said was just astounding to me, and I'm thinking if I'm an advisor, what can I do to get my arms around this and to evolve with, you know, the inevitable nature of things? And, you know, if you could just talk for a little bit about what advisors and firms can do to solve for and even mitigate these challenges, that would be great.
Sure. At a broad level, the mandate is really clear. It's really stepping away from commissions, stepping away from a suitability standard and toward this fiduciary practice, thinking about your clients, always taking into account your client's best interests. So with that in mind, to the extent you're receiving revenue sharing payments or you're in a situation where perhaps your client isn't fully aware of how your compensation is being earned, you need to gravitate away from those arrangements. You need to know your responsibilities as a fiduciary. Are you selecting and maintaining investment choices? Are you ensuring that plan fees paid from participant accounts or IRAs are reasonable? Are you ensuring that the plan's properly administered? What specific tasks are you as an advisor taking on for that client? And then how are you memorializing those tasks? As I indicated before, you really need to consider or move to level fees. Contemplating BICE and sending out a disclosure that indicates potential material conflicts is probably not the way most folks want to approach this regulation. The better way is to move to this level fee environment where there's no potential for a conflict, where clearly your client's interest is aligned with yours. So what does this mean? You really can't gain a different level of compensation for one product versus another in the same category. So if you're selling mutual funds, for instance, you'll no longer be able to accept higher payouts or trails on certain funds or not others, or any other form of variable payment. You really have to get ready for BICE. Even if you're a fee-only advisor, there will be instances where you need to contemplate whether the best interest contract exemption is necessary for you. For example, if you're charging one level of fee at a plan level and you're recommending an IRA for that client, you're going into, let's say, a level fee IRA, then maybe the onus is somewhat less than full BICE if you're recommending a commission product, but you definitely have to contemplate it and get ready. You really need to speak to a compliance expert about that. BICE, of course, requires you to affirm your client's right to complete fee information, provide access to your compensation, indicate any material conflicts, as I've indicated, and really it mandates that all of these things and the disclosures are carefully considered by you and your firm. Keep great records. If you're wondering what to do with your CRM system beyond birthdays and anniversaries, this is really how these systems should be used going forward. How do you prove that the tasks that you've been contracted to provide are being fulfilled? Note your delivery of your annual review or your quarterly statement. Client meetings should very clearly be indicated in your CRM system. You should have certain success metrics for certain roles. For example, enrollment meetings, you may want to consider a report that indicates greater level contribution or deferral percentages by participants, ability to take full advantage of the matching contribution by participants, diversification rates, whether or not as many participants are defaulting after your enrollment meeting than before. These sorts of reports are going to show very clearly your value and the value of your firm and will support your fees as reasonable. Also, don't assume that small plans with few participants can skate by. The rules apply to everyone. Compliance experts are unanimous in recommending meticulous records for activities once the DOL rule is in force. No subsidies. If currently or in the past you've charged higher fees to to the 401k to offer additional services to some folks at your client firm or others, that discount is clearly prohibited. It needs to come to an end. Finally, there's a famous line in an ERISA case that says a pure heart and an empty head are not enough. Basically, ignorance of the law is no excuse. These requirements do apply, and you as an advisor operating in this space need to understand them.
So, Mark, that's a lot to get your head around, and I know that you're a recovering ERISA attorney, and I just wonder, from your firm's perspective specifically, how do you think about these problems and solutions?
For us, we really started our firm with this concept in mind to offer a conflict-free platform in the 401k, 403b space. So you might say we were conflict-free before it was cool or required. We've never offered or promoted any specific funds or had a hidden agenda because we understood that there was a possibility for these prohibited transactions even before this change in the definition of fiduciary. So we always fully disclose and offset mutual fund revenue and really built our platform to support independent advisors, whether or not they were acting as fiduciaries. We allow investment managers to act as 338s, ERISA 338s, that's those who are accepting discretion for plan investments, and to globally manage portfolios. And we support models as designated investment alternatives so that advisors can actually put different funds in the models. Maybe they're suitable for the model, but not part of the individual self-directed participant lineup. When others were building so-called open architecture platforms to support 12b1 fees in various levels, we never did. We built our systems to support collection of mutual fund revenue, full disclosure of it, and then offset dollar for dollar either against advisor fees or record keeping fees or just rebate it to the plan. So our firm, we've always said to advisors, you pick the funds and we'll do the rest. We feel like we've built this fiduciary bubble wrap where an advisor can step very cleanly into the 401k world and offer the same services that they provide to their high net worth clients and feel very comfortable that whether it's fee disclosure or Department of Labor compliance or other items is being taken care of, and they focus on what they do best, which is managing money.
So I'm curious about the different ways that advisors and firms can access services. I know that I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile, and you're the CEO of PCS. So also with the Advisor Lab, could you distinguish, you know, where the services begin and end, or are they all like one big bundle?
Yeah, the Advisor Lab, they really are a bundle. And in fact, basically what we saw about 6 or 7 years ago was that fiduciary advisors, those who are looking to offer an open, conflict-free platform, needed the same marketing tools and reports to assist them in telling their story that the larger bundled providers had. And that's really where the Advisor Lab was born. What it's evolved into is really a single source for benchmarking plans, prospecting, acquiring, converting, and then maintaining business. So on the acquisition side, the Advisor Lab allows an advisor to change from a sale to a conversation. It really becomes more about what are the weaknesses maybe or opportunities of improvement in the plan or for the plan, and how can that advisor assist them in getting there. As part of the process of building the lab, we built a lot of other tools to make it really easy for an advisor so they didn't need to download performance or other information into a separate system. So advisors can generate an annual review that's really one click that takes into account all the data at a participant level, all the services that are being provided, and benchmarks fees and services against the broad list of every retirement plan that's filing a 5500 with the Department of Labor.
So I'm starting to get a feel for the Advisor Lab, and I understand you have just launched or released some new features, something with around Advisor 2.0. So could you talk a little bit about the updates and complying with the DOL rule with Advisor Lab?
Absolutely. Yes. After the new regulation was released, we saw another opportunity in how we could assist advisors in building in the compliance. Basically, we could use the automation and the data that we have in our system to, in effect, ensure compliance. So the first tool that we've worked on is really a compliant IRA rollover program. Whether it's an off-the-street rollover, let's say it's a new potential client, or it's a client that the advisor is looking to transition from a commission IRA, our compliant rollover tool walks the client through the process and presents all the disclosures, pulls in all the information about the existing offering, compares it to the new offering, and builds the necessary documentation to support the advisor's recommendation. So it allows for a simple transition of assets with minimal market risk, allows the advisor to maintain fees on assets leaving plans where we're acting as the record keeper. Because we're really in the business at PCS of record keeping very small balances, it allows advisors to maintain those IRAs with very small balances. It provides the firm, the broker-dealer, with control over investment options and a view into this compliant path so that they can assure that the advisors offering and receiving all the documentation he or she needs to ensure compliance. We're also, as part of 2.0, just in hearkening back to the comment I made about a CRM, is we've built our CRM into it. So there are several journeys that an advisor might go through with an individual client or certain roles that the advisor plays with a plan sponsor. For example, an enrollment meeting or an annual review. Our system will track that for the advisor, provide reminders, and actually initiate contact directly with the client, providing the documentation that's necessary. Let's say those, for example, those success metrics after an enrollment meeting. So the Lab 2.0 will give the compliance professional a window into user management, an administrative portal, and dashboard. All the data aggregation that we currently have will be available across plans and individual accounts. All the compliance notification, whether it's annual fee disclosure, the 408B2 report, participant notifications, QDIA notices, it's all built in and tracked and can be auto-set to be sent to the plan sponsor for distribution, or directly distributed to plan participants or individual account holders. There's a document vault that includes all the reporting and other documentation necessary to demonstrate compliance as well as to show the advisor's services and as well as a sales funnel and book of business analysis. So we think Advisor Lab 2.0 is coming in at just the right time and will offer, whether you're new to the 401k space or an existing advisor, a real leg up.
Mark, I've learned so much today, and I'm amazed at all of the tools and insights and capabilities that you're bringing through PCS and the Advisor Lab. How can people learn more about PCS and Advisor Lab?
Sure. They can either log on to the PCS website and indicate their information on pcscapital.com, and one of our sales team will reach out, or the Advisor Lab at theadvisorlab.com. Our sales team, that's really the same sales team, will be happy to reach out and walk you through all the programs and how we can assist you in your business.
All right. Mark Klein, CEO of PCS and also the Advisor Lab, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. My pleasure.